Hans Blix is a name you may know. He was the chief weapons inspector for the United Nations before we went into Iraq. Now he is part of a group that is called the Council on Weapons of Mass Destruction. And I've asked him to join us here this afternoon ahead of an appearance he's also going to be making in the St. Louis area. Next Tuesday, he'll be at McKendree University making an appearance as part of their Distinguished Speaker Series. Here is Hans Blix. Welcome to the show.
Well, thanks very much.
It's a pleasure having you on here. You're not in the United States now, are you?
Oh, I'm at my hometown in Stockholm.
Oh, so we're going international here to Sweden to have you on here. One of the reasons I wanted to have you on is because of a new report that's out this week where American intelligence officials are somewhat backing off from their claims that North Korea has an active program to enrich uranium. We just found out the other day that the United States and North Korea have come to some sort of deal which involves oil and North Korea not going nuclear. And so I wanted to get your reaction to some of these reports, which I'm sure you're aware of.
Yes. I think what is striking is that this intelligence came in the year of 2002, about the same time that the intelligence on Iraq was inflated and totally wrong. And on the basis of the reports, their understanding that North Korea was doing under enrichment of uranium, the U.S. stopped the oil flow of oil under the old 1994 agreement. And the North Koreans then broke with the agreement, and they left the NPT and threw out the inspectors. And thereafter, they were able to make more plutonium. And the bomb they tested recently was a plutonium bomb. So the question that arises now was really, was it so wise to go ahead on the basis of that information in 2002 that might have been inflated?
And the question of whether it was inflated or not still is to be determined. But the question also is, should we have been taking such a tough guy stance with Iraq over the with North Korea over the last 5 years? And do you think that propelled them to actually move forward with their nuclear program?
Yeah, there's a great probability of that having happened. And what we now know is that they had imported some centrifuges. And, of course, centrifuges are made for enrichment of uranium. But with a couple of them, you can't do very much. And it may be that in 2002 they overestimated what had happened and that the North Koreans had very little of an enrichment program. And now, if the country is opening up and letting in international inspectors, maybe it will be shown that it was very little that they had done. If so, I think it would have been regrettable that the U.S. terminated the cooperation and enabled them to go for plutonium. It would have been, maybe they wouldn't have had enough ability to make a bomb if the U.S. had maintained the agreement. But that still remains to be seen in detail. We don't know yet, but it seems that U.S. intelligence is backing off a bit from the contentions they made in 2002.
When we are dealing with Kim Jong-il or Mahmoud Ahmadinejad in Iran, How can we trust these guys?
Well, as a former inspector, I don't trust anybody, and neither Washington nor these guys. I think we want to have evidence. And mainly, I remember well in the autumn of 2002 when I was in New York heading the UN inspectors, and we heard about this alleged agreement between Iraq and Niger. And I thought myself it was a bit funny. Why should the Iraqis want to import yellow cake or uranium oxide? That's a long, long way from a bomb. But it fell on my colleague Mohammed El-Bardeh and his people to examine the contract. They only got it from the CIA sometime, I think, in February 2003. And it took them less than a day then to establish that this was a forgery. And that was known before the war, before the invasion was launched.
So you say we need to investigate. We can't just trust. How do we ever really know what's going on inside secretive countries like North Korea and, to a certain extent, Iran?
No, there are limitations to what you can know, but I think that they made worst-case scenarios of what have they seen, and they certainly have not examined critically the evidence they have. You see, in a way, you could say that inspectors are in a more luxurious position than governments because they don't have to draw a conclusion that this is the way it is. They say what they know, and they say what they don't know. Governments have to take decisions occasionally, even on limited intelligence. But the least you can ask is that they examine critically the evidence they have. I don't think that occurred in 2002.
So do you think what has happened in the last half decade when it comes to weapons of mass destruction and the so-called axis of evil, do you put more blame for what has happened on politicians or the intelligence community?
Well, both, actually, because I think both the UK intelligence and the American intelligence clearly bent in the direction that they felt the executives wanted. We did not, as international inspectors, because our bosses were the Security Council, and we didn't feel the pressure from the Security Council to bend anyway. And in any case, we were international civil servants. We wouldn't have bent.
Talking with Hans Blix, the former UN weapons inspector, here on the Paul Harris Show on News Talk 1120 KMOX. Do you think that at this point the United States should open direct talks with Tehran?
Yes, I think so. I think it's a grave mistake to make a precondition that they should suspend their enrichment program, because the whole talks, the whole problem is about the suspension of the enrichment program. And how can you expect them then to do their part of this deal before the other side has firmly presented what is theirs? I mean, who tosses away a trump card before you sit down to play poker?
But if you're going to play the carrot and stick thing, how do you get anything done without a carrot?
No, they have carrots. And the Europeans have offered a number of carrots, and I think very wisely so. They have offered the Iranians to become members of the World Trade Organization and facilitate the investments in Iran, and also to ensure that they would have access to fuel for their reactors. But there are two carrots that they could not, Europeans cannot offer. One is assurance that there will be no attacks on Iraq, on Iran. And when you compare this case to North Korea, you find that the U.S. has, in fact, offered in the case of North Korea that it will not be attacked from the outside or even with subversive means from the inside if they go along with the deal. And the other point the U.S. could offer, which might be harder from the point of view of domestic politics, would be a normalization of relations. They have offered that to North Korea, and both relations with Japan and with the United States. But there's been no talk about that in the case of Iran. So I think there are some important cards, important leverages that the U.S. would have if they sit down and talk with the Iranians.
There's been a lot of movement on the part of the Pentagon in the last few months to put warships in the Gulf. I guess that is to raise the specter of, hey, Iran, if you don't pay attention, we are still here and we are still a powerful military force. Do you see that as a mistake or a good move?
Well, it cuts both ways. On the whole, I think it is negative. I mean, surely some Iranians will be scared, and they know that the U.S. can send cruise missiles on various installations in Iran. I don't think they fear there would be a land invasion, but cruise missiles. On the other hand, you know, if you're subjected to a danger like that, pride in a people like the Iranians will say, look, we are threatened. We don't want to give in on a threat like this. So it could also be that the president, who is a pretty wild character, that he will get more support from the threat from the outside. By contrast, I think that economic pressures is a different matter. That is not as provocative. And that is what has been done through the Security Council. So I can see a reason for that, but I think the force is smacks a little of 1910 naval maneuvers.
Iran is really run by Khamenei, the religious leader of that country, and yet they have this president, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, who we mentioned before, who goes around the world mouthing off and saying things like Israel must be destroyed, etc. Do you think the Israelis are keeping an even closer eye on Iran than the United States and Great Britain and the rest of the world are? And if they feeling threatened by Iran's moves in a nuclear direction, that they might take the offensive?
They might, but I think it's unlikely. If Netanyahu were to come to power in Israel, maybe it would be a little more probable. But I think if they do not feel that they have the United States behind them, I doubt they would do it, because they don't really have the power. Or they might think that they will trigger things and the United States will be obliged to follow suit. But on balance, I think that if the U.S. holds back, the Israelis will also hold back. And it's understandable that they are agitated about the man says, but clearly the Iranians themselves are divided. I think Washington, too, is divided. Between the Pentagon people and the State Department. State Department wanting more dues in diplomacy, and Pentagon being responsible, more wishing more military demonstration.
Having been at the center of the controversy in the lead-up to the build-up with the war in Iraq, where do you think we are in terms of Iran?
Well, there are some similarities, many people say, between the situation in Iraq that there was in 2003 and Iran. And this is the military build-up and the accusations that they have weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, they said, which there were none. In the case of Iran, it's really saying that they have intentions. Well, they may, but it's very difficult to establish. However, there are big differences. I should say emphatically that I think it would be very desirable that to persuade the Iranians to stay away from enrichment, because if they go ahead with it, tensions will rise in the Middle East.
You don't believe that they just want to do it for nuclear power, do you?
It might. I mean, I think that I don't think it's conclusive that they would go for weapons. And moreover, when we say they, we assume that it's one monolithic block, and that's not so. I'm sure that there are different attitudes in Iran, and that Ahmadinejad may be on this in the hard line, but there are others who pull in another direction. And I think one should play and encourage that attitude.
You're now part of the Weapons of Mass Destruction Commission, which I believe is funded by the Swedish government.
That's right.
And what do you do?
Well, since the 2003, when I came home, I was asked to set up this commission. It's an international independent commission. We produced a report, a very solid chunk of work, by the 1st of June last year. And we had members from all over the world, including from the United States. We had Bill Perry, the former Secretary of Defense. And we have Gareth Evans, former Foreign Minister of Australia. And Mr. Dhanapala was the Undersecretary for Disarmament at the UN. And we produced a unanimous report on how the world can tackle the problems of weapons of mass destruction, that's a nuclear, chemical, and biological. And it urges, actually, a revival of disarmament. The world is now going in the wrong direction. I mean, Al Gore is talking about one inconvenient truth, and I fully agree with him on the global warming. But I think that the world is now moving more in direction of rearmament, should wake us up to the danger that this may be self-fulfilling. If we rearm, the U.S. is considering new types of nuclear weapons, an amalgamation and modernization of two different types. The U.K. is about to take a decision about new types of nuclear weapons. The Chinese tested something and shot down a satellite some time ago, and they are urging that there should be discussion about to prevent any war and any race in the space. So all these things are very worrisome. Also, the establishment of U.S. Interceptors in Czechoslovakia, in former Czech Republic, and in Poland. These things are going in the wrong direction. After all, we have the end of the Cold War is finished. Then what are they quarreling about in substance?
One last thing before I let you go here, Mr. Blix. Do you believe that there were and still are weapons of mass destruction either in Iraq or that were in Iraq and got moved to Syria or other places, as many people believe?
No, I think that's totally wrong. And I'm sure that we would have heard very much in going in that direction from the U.S. military if they had believed it. But the U.S. military has not said so. And we know that Kamal was the son-in-law of Saddam, that he said in 1992 or 93, when he defected, he was in Jordan. And he said that, no, it was all destroyed in the summer of 1991. And I think that was true. No, we didn't trust him. We shouldn't have trusted him either. But he was actually telling the truth.
I've heard the same thing from Scott Ritter. So now we have two former UN weapons inspectors who feel the same way about that.
Well, I wouldn't trust him.
Are you and Scott still not getting along?
Well, I've never had anything to do with him. I think he's an idealist, but I don't think that his judgment has always been very good.
Okay. Hans Blix will be at McKendree College on Tuesday night, part of their Distinguished Speaker Series in the Center for the Arts there at 7 o'clock on Tuesday night, March 6th. And I appreciate your time here this afternoon.
You're welcome.
Thank you for joining us live from Stockholm, Sweden. Hans Blix here on the Paul Harris Show on News Talk 1120 KMOX.